Blog Talk Radio.
Ralph Poynter, What's Happening? And our news analysis, as always, deals with an anatomy of oppression, which requires an anatomy of colonialism, imperialism, an anatomy of the capitalist system. And you will hear many of our panelists contributing tonight, because we are concerned about the fact that the media has done it again. Lies, and more lies. And we're wondering what will be the reaction of Americans. And we are saying, how must we react regarding these lies about Syria? And we're also saying, regarding new organizations that are popping up here and there, worldwide, positive or negative, left wing, all right wing, what should our relationships be? And without further ado, while you think over these questions, this is Ralph Poynter in the house.
Thank you, Best Sister Betty, brothers and sisters. And I again explain the terms brothers and sisters. Those of us who have a unity of purpose, and that purpose is equality of all. And what I believe, Ralph Poynter, to be clear that this is my philosophy and our philosophy, Sister Betty and those who are close to us, and Sister Lynn, who has transitioned. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, equality, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police as the army of occupation have taken lynching outside again. And the lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media, because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people. Our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, this evening, our sister Betty was on a program on Manhattan Cable speaking of the issue of Hep C, hepatitis C, and the issue of Mumia Abu-Jamal, our most celebrated, if I can say that, most celebrated of our political prisoners. And because he is most celebrated, he is able to bring this issue of Hep C to the world. And what we are saying is that the issue of Hep C is not related only to Mumia Abu-Jamal. It is related to all of the people in prison. And we go further still. It is related to the American population because of the consequences of Hep C. And then we go further still to talk about the relation of Hep C to the world in terms of the people who have hepatitis C and the consequences. And we go further still to talk about its economic implications to imperialism and capitalism and the people in the world. But if we get time later on in the program, I'm going to ask Sister Betty to go into detail about how it relates to we as a people, how it relates to the world, and we go all the way back to Socrates and Plato, and I say that with an asterisk when we talk about democracy, with an asterisk, much the same as I talk about the asterisk we must talk about in all of the records of the one of the things that was accused for Americans, that people in the industrialized world complain about Americans, and they say these Americans, every time they talk about issues, it comes down to sports. And I'm going to be guilty, as all other Americans, because I am aware of the inconsistencies in the American culture. I admit to being a part of that American culture, not a part of that American philosophy, but I'm going to talk about sports to explain the asterisks, all of the records of American sports. Must be an asterisk, must be included, because the best did not include people of color. Now, I know I have gone astray, and so I'm waiting for the hook, and I always say, and I'm going to stray again to our lawyer, Bob Boyle, who at the bedside of Lynn Stewart while she was transitioning said to me, I am going to go and report on what happened at the bedside of Lynn Stewart while she's transitioning. And I will report to all of my friends. I was there for an hour. And Lynn Stewart did not interrupt Ralph once. I don't know if people will believe it. These are the words of Bob Boyle, the esteemed and great lawyer who's working on behalf of just the law, making it equal, his representation of people in all categories. As Bob Boyle says, I don't know if they're going to believe me, but I spoke for an hour. We discussed things for an hour, and Lynn didn't interrupt people once. Lynn didn't interrupt Ralph once. So therefore, she must be on the verge of transition. And now I am going to go back to what we were talking about, our basic issues, the purpose. Our purpose, brothers and sisters, is equality of all. And so, without further ado, I'm going to switch over to our sister, Betty Davis, who has the hook to tell me what's coming. Sister Betty.
Well, it goes without saying that we have a full house tonight. And we're going to get to everyone because this is serious. It's one thing to make war with Vietnam. It's one thing to make war with North Korea. It's another thing, however, to make war with China, Russia, and Syria. And so we will be dealing with the question of the media has done it again. Lies, lies, and more lies. Can we even believe what we see? But before we get to that, I want to announce that Brother Larry Pinckney of the Black Writers Guild in the house, and we want to, Black Writers Anarchist Guild is in the house. And we missed him last week, so we definitely want to welcome him this week. Go ahead, Brother Larry Pinckney, former political prisoner, but Black Panther. Brother Larry, are you in the house?
I am indeed, my sister. Thank you so much, Sister Professor Betty Davis. Love and kudos to you, to Brother Ralph. As you well know, I know you're right there listening, and much love to you, and much love to the spirit of Sister Lynn Stewart, which still continues. I want to begin as I usually begin, and that is, free all political prisoners. Free them now. I also want to say, as always, all power to the people, because we are the only ones, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, everyday struggling people, we are the only ones who can bring about any kind of substantive change, real systemic change. Sister Betty, and also I want to, of course, extend my respect and kudos to all of the other speakers who will be speaking quite shortly, as I will be succinct. And say thank you, and I too will be listening. And just let me say, if I may, that the topic that Sister Betty and Brother Ralph were alluding to is one that is extremely serious. And I think that's exactly the words, or those are exactly the words that Sister Betty used. Serious, very serious. The MSM, so-called mainstream media, I call it the vomit stream media because that's what it is. It regurgitates vomit and feeds us, the people, vomit. We must learn to not only reject it, but to ensure that other people around this country, throughout this nation, reject it. We are very, very, very close to thermonuclear war. Sisters and brothers, I'm going to say that again. We are very, very, very close to thermonuclear war. And in fact, instead of using the word war, let me use it, let me say what it really would be. It would be annihilation, because no one will win. All the people will lose. We must stop it. The Democratic Party, so-called Democratic Party, the Republicans, etc., have sold the people out. The mainstream media is beating the drums for nuclear annihilation. One does not play with this kind of thing. Our political prisoners knew that way back 40, 50 years ago, and I say that not to be exaggerating. Some of our political prisoners have been in prison for well over 40 years and are still languishing in these gulags, torture chambers. And they told us then that we had better educate, organize, educate ourselves, and understand what time it is. Today, we had better educate and organize and understand what time it is. Our very lives depend on it, the lives of our children, our grandchildren, and any posterity, if we are to have a posterity. So without further ado, I want to make sure I give everyone a chance, so I'm going to cut it off here, and I'm going to say simply this: free our political prisoners, and while we do so, make it crystal clear to everyone that the only way to free ourselves is to free them now. We must educate and organize and carry on. And as Joe Hill said, don't mourn, organize. We've got serious business to take care of. The very existence of humanity is at stake. Thank you, and all power to the people.
Thank you, Brother Larry. And what we would like to do at this time is to acknowledge that there have been protests, and there were several protests in New York City. And I'm hoping that some people will call in and give us an update. One of the things we heard is that it started out in the hundreds in New York City, and by the time they marched to the second location, you had 1,000 people, and most of them were young people within the 25-year age group. But without further ado, we're going to turn to Brother Matt Turner, who is our poet resident, because Sister Lynn has left a tremendous gap when it comes to the poetry of the oppressed. Brother Matt Turner.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Loud and clear.
Oh, okay.
Most of your mics are open, so try to be careful with the background noise.
This is called Weaponized Condolences of a Warfare State. Blood, guts, severed heads and limbs litter rubble. Blood has not had time to coagulate. Wall Street piranha cry crocodile tears on terror. Opening bomb bays, their hearts go out. $110,000 a pop. Job creators of ruin, gifting themselves another war. It could have been Port-au-Prince, Kinshasa, Tripoli, Damascus, Baghdad, Boston, London, or New York City. This time it was the City of Lights. Some listened to leaders without legs to stand on, fooling fools and babies. Briefly, we were innocent. never naive around shocking, awful carnage in our names, crimes against humanity. The hospital bombing Nobel Peace Prize winning war criminal cries antifreeze tears. Palestinians feel the burn of white phosphorus corporate catechism. Yes, we can seamlessly wage endless war and do regime change you can believe in. It's still the new American century, and a gold-plated Iron Lady rusts in peace, waits on the wings of a predator drone. Electoral Lilliputians lost their minds and moral compasses, trading organizing for orgasm with the second coming of Christ. They were once anti-war activists. Now, they're just junkies with eight-year hitches, eunuchs and nuns taking mule dung wafer vows of silence, worms crawling around searching for imaginary openings to organize.
Thank you. And I was just listening to that and saying, you know, how long will it take for me to absorb that which you are giving to us? I will listen to it again and again, but I feel it. As Lynn Stewart used to say to me, as I listen to music, the only way, or one of the ways, that ideas and thoughts and emotions can be transmitted to me, poetry is what transmits ideas and creates emotions for her. And my dear friend and comrade, you have raised emotions with that. I will listen to it again and again and enjoy it and absorb it, and which will cause me to react. And as who was it said, an idea is like sitting on a pin. It causes you to do something. I have sat on the pin of Nat Turner, and I am going to do something. Thank you for that, Sister Betty.
All right. We recognize that we have a lot of scholars and warriors in the house tonight. So without further ado, we have one of our warriors is a wounded warrior, and I don't mean to take that term lightly. Brother Tom is in the house, and he's not well, so he's going to give us his brief reaction to the Syrian Holocaust. Brother Tom, your mic is open.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, I have sinus problems, so I'm going to make this short because I can't speak too well. But I think we must remember some very basic realities. The first reality is that capitalism cannot survive without wars. Now, in the past, the capitalist countries were able to engage in world wars that were so destructive that it threatened the capitalist system itself. Mm-hmm. But there were no nuclear weapons involved. Ironically, the advent of nuclear weapons has forced capitalist countries and to be more careful about controlling war, not to eliminate war, but to control war. And a good example of this is the so-called Cold War, which wasn't very cold from time to time. and sometimes threatened to get out of hand, as in the Cuban Missile Crisis. But it required war, because without war, capitalism slows down and goes into a depression, and that causes all kinds of problems. So we have to remember that. Now we have a situation where it looks like these so-called controlled wars, especially in the Middle East, are heating up. But I do not believe for one minute that the United States, or Western Europe, or Russia wants any kind of a hot war. They want to keep these wars under control. And I do not, and we, none of the reality is the way governments behave, especially in a capitalist country like the United States. Now, people think that Trump and his administration have the last word on domestic and foreign policy. But we know, or we should know, that he doesn't. The Democratic Party leadership, Obama, Hillary Clinton, the rest of them, the Republican Party leadership, they are all stooges of the people who really make the decisions. And those people are downtown on Wall Street, the big bankers, finance capital, and the military industrial complex. They're the ones that make the final decisions. And Trump knows this. And so he has, whatever he does, you know that he didn't do just on the spur of the moment when he happened to see some babies being gassed. That is just ridiculous. He's not interested in any humanitarian consideration for babies. We've been killing people willy-nilly by the thousands, by the 10,000s, ever since we intervened in the Middle East, and a few babies makes no difference to Trump or to his daughter or any of these phony criminals. So here we have a situation. Trump threw some missiles at a Syrian Air Force base. But before he unleashed those missiles on that base, he contacted Putin. And he said that he was going to do it. So make sure that Putin didn't have any Russians in the immediate area. And also, Putin, so what happened? Missiles were thrown into this base, and part of the base was destroyed, but most of the base was not destroyed, and the base is going to be in operation again so that the Assad government can do whatever it wants and kill more people, and we can, our government can continue killing the people, because what's going on in Syria is a proxy war between the Russians and the Iranians on one side, with their ally, with their stooge Assad, and on the other side, the United States and its allies, the Saudi Arabians and the Turks and the different nations in NATO. And the challenge here is how to keep these wars going without getting them out of control. Now, two people in particular benefited a great deal from this sham attack on the Syrian Air Force base. Those two people had lost a great deal of popularity among their populations. Huge demonstrations were taking place in Russia. Huge demonstrations were taking part in the United States. And guess what? Now, now Putin has become very popular again in Russia because he is standing up to the imperialist United States. And Trump has become very much more popular now in the United States because he is finally drawing the red line, whatever they call that, and saying that you can't do this, and he's showing American power, machoism on both sides, Putin and Trump. And so that this has temporarily benefited these two overgrown little boys that are playing war games. The result of all of this is that both the United States and Russia and these other countries, including the Far East, China and North Korea, and they're all playing these games in order to keep themselves, their governments in power, in order to keep their elites making money. The big challenge is how to continue these wars without their getting out of hand.
Please enter your password, then press pound.
That is it.
Thank you so much.
Please
for
enter
that.
Your password, then press pound.
And I say over and over again.
Unfortunately, the system cannot process your entries. Please try again later. Goodbye.
Oh, what happened?
At somebody's cell phone. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm. So that's my analysis. I do not.
And
I happen. By the way, I've been listening to right wing radio and the TV stations, and they're all saying that we cannot let this get out of control. We cannot allow ourselves to go into any kind of a all-out war, that we have to use diplomatic means. It is bad for business to have an out war. The people that really run this country, they don't want that. They want a limited war. They want to continue the Cold War. And that's what Trump is that's what he will do, that's what Putin will do, and that's what Obama did, and that's what they're going to try to do. Now, somebody down below, some lesser general or something, he may get out of hand, somebody's plane may get shot down, somebody's ship may be sunk. That is a danger. But I do not believe that the power elites of all of these countries, whether they're in the United States or Russia or China, they're not going to allow this to get out of hand. That's in nobody's interest. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Tom. And as we say on this program, education, education, education. And we are about to further our education, and I'm going to Sister Betty Davis.
Okay, we have Sister Suzanne dealing with the issue of Mumia waiting in the wings. But before we get to that, because it's important to note that she went to the demonstration that was against this latest attack on Syria. But before we get to that, we want to go to one of our watchers in the movement, the all-seeing eye, Brother Ralph Shulman. Are you in the house?
Yes, Betty. How are you doing?
Well, I'm going to tell you the truth. I wish I could believe what Brother Tom is saying, that they don't want to get it out of hand. But I do know that there is such a thing as you can't predict social dynamite. Nobody predicted the 60s.
I think it's my own assessment of that is that the ruling class is much more lethal than that, and that the determination to impose their control knows no limits, including the ready preparation and contemplation of nuclear conflict. To that end, I would like to reference a document that comes out of the organizer, socialist organizer, which ran this piece from me called Shifting the Blame, the cover-up of U.S. war crimes in Mosul, for the April issue of Socialist Organizer, which reads as follows. The scope of the murderous assault by U.S. imperialism on the Iraqi city of Mosul, with its genocide-scale war crimes, was beginning to filter into the mainstream media. And then, just as Trump, the Democratic Party, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the U.S. intelligence apparatus were about to be indicted for these war crimes before world public opinion, came the April 4th chemical attack on the town of Khan Sheikhoun in Idlib province in northwestern Syria. Responsibility for launching this attack was immediately placed on Bashar al-Assad, although no evidence was produced to back this claim. No matter. The U.S. government seized upon this tragedy to shift the blame from the war crimes in Mosul to the Syrian government for its alleged sarin gas assault in Khan Sheikhoun. What were these U.S. war crimes in Mosul? Amnesty International published a devastating report on March 28th charging U.S. rulers with war crimes, specifying, quote, disproportionate, indiscriminate saturation bombing of residential areas of Mosul that slaughtered thousands of civilian men, women, and children on March 17th. Over the course of the following week, the Iraqi Civil Defense Department announced that 531 further bodies were dug out, with more to come. By March 28th, Lieutenant General Stephen Townsend, U.S. commander in Iraq and Syria, admitted to Pentagon reporters, "We had a role in these casualties," unquote. Townsend later attempted to blame the victims, claiming there was no reason for civilians to congregate inside all these buildings and high-rises targeted by U.S. planes, and going on to blame ISIS for using civilians as human shields. Independent media outlets, however, told another story, based on extended interviews with survivors. Entire families had congregated in the basement of neighboring homes to escape the relentless bombing by U.S. forces. Their personal accounts are devastating. So horrendous was the carnage that even Iraqi Vice President Osama al-Nujafi, who is from Mosul and serves as the most senior Sunni official in Iraq, responded to Townsend by designating the U.S. targeting and bombing of Mosul as a, quote, humanitarian catastrophe, unquote, resulting in, quote, the martyrdom of thousands of civilians, unquote. He called for an emergency session of the Iraqi parliament and an official investigation of the slaughter. Al-Nujafi charged that these ongoing mass civilian casualties were the result of, quote, new and changed rules of engagement by the U.S.-led coalition that minimized any attempts to protect the lives of unarmed men, women, and children trapped in Mosul. Iraqi officers cited by the New York Times on March 28 noted, quote, "The American-led coalition has been quicker to strike urban targets from the air with less time to weigh the risks for civilians, a change reflecting a renewed push by the U.S. military under Trump to speed up the battle for Mosul," unquote. Reporting from the scene of the devastation, the New York Times account assumed ominous proportions for the Trump administration and U.S. rulers. It described, quote, "A panorama of destruction in the neighborhood of Jadida, so vast that it's been compared with the destruction to that of Hiroshima in Japan, where the United States dropped atomic bomb in World War II. There were charred arms wrapped in pieces of red fabric poking from the rubble, rescue workers in red jumpsuits who wore face masks to avoid the extensive stench with rifles slung over their shoulders searching the wreckage for endless bodies, unquote. The Amnesty International report confirms that the war crimes in Jadida are only the bloodiest in a series of attacks being carried out by U.S.-led forces. Quote, evidence gathered on the ground in East Mosul points to an alarming pattern of U.S.-led coalition airstrikes, which have destroyed whole houses with entire families inside, unquote, reports Amnesty's senior crisis response advisor, Donatella Rovera, following field investigations in the war-ravaged city. The high civilian toll suggests that coalition forces leading the offensive in Mosul have failed to take any precautions to prevent civilian deaths in flagrant violation of international humanitarian war law, unquote. By March 21st, the monitoring group Air Wars recorded over 1,000 casualty scale events resulting from airstrikes by the United States and its allies in Iraq and Syria. That's 1,000 individual events. Not surprisingly, the changed rules of engagement enacted by the Pentagon under the Trump administration have not elicited any protests from the leadership of the Democratic Party. This is because the war escalation in Iraq and Syria enjoys full bipartisan support. In fact, as the Amnesty International report documented, quote, the carnage in Mosul was already well underway before Barack Obama left the White House, unquote. Jadida, of course, never became a household word in the United States. Reports were only beginning to make their way into the corporate media about the extent of the U.S.-sponsored carnage in Mosul. The sarin attack in Syria came just at the right moment to enable Trump and his Democratic Party allies to shift blame for war crimes in Mosul to the Assad regime, all the better to justify and cover the U.S. missile attacks against the sovereign nation of Syria. Now, that's the piece. And what it addresses is the fact that the use of sarin gas has been a constant in the area, but it has been indubitably attributed by all sources to al-Nusra and Idlib and ISIS, the jihadi forces that had been coordinated by the Emirates and by Saudi Arabia, with the intelligence agents of the United States coordinating it as well. Always ascribed to Assad, which is not to in any way indicate that Assad has not been part of U.S. operations in the past. But the prognosis of what they intend for Syria is very clear. They intend to fragment each nation into its ethnic and religious components in order to destroy the national composition of those societies and their capacity to control their own resources or to resist imperialist usurpation of these, the blood for oil syndrome that we know so well. And what is its work here, in particular with respect to Syria and this imputation of a gas attack, which is something that has been long documented as essential component of U.S. policy itself, not only with respect to the white phosphorus and the chemical warfare that is the constant of U.S. warfare throughout Indochina and throughout the Arab East for decades now, but specifically with respect to the indication that this particular use of chemicals is a deployment by imperialism to rationalize and justify the destruction of Syria and fragmenting it in its entirety. And beyond that is the aiming at Iran and Putin's oligarchical Russia, which they seek as targets to dismantle, just as they in fact have targeted China, and that is too on the agenda. But the specifics of this cover-up of the war crimes in Mosul is that the scale of it had reached proportions where the U.S. was actually facing war crimes trials that were being proposed and organized by establishment forces in Iraq, and not only in Iraq but beyond. They had to change the agenda. They had to change the message. They had to provide a new crisis, and the crisis is of their choice and of their doing and their imputation to Syria as a means of extending this. We're no way out of the woods here. What is being prepared in the way of war attacks does not exclude Russia, does not exclude the Assad regime. It was something that the Democratic Party and the intelligence apparatus had been preparing. The biggest mouthpiece for it was Hillary Clinton herself. She waged a fight that was aimed as much at Barack Obama's attempts to enlist the Iranian regime in collaboration in this before doing so. That's the background, that's the context, that's the situation, and it's a deadly one that we cannot take lightly.
Thank you so much for that. And this is the news that we are privileged to hear, that very few stations, very few media organizations will tell us, and that which we must know and understand to counteract, to fight against. Because we all know, history has told us, that change is inevitable. But the question is, where will change come from? Will it come from within? And this information that we have heard, that we are hearing, is important and necessary to create an atmosphere that will enable us to create or to induce or to inform a population with the ability within our society to create change, or change will come from without, as it has come from many, or the history tells us changes come about from outside influences, because change had not taken place inside of a nation. And I will take the hook and turn the program back to Betty Davis.
I want to acknowledge that there are many people in the house tonight. So I, and as we were speaking, more people have signed on. So I ask you to be like family and allow the voices to be heard. But before we go to Sister Suzanne, before we go to Sister Ann Lamb of Jericho, before we go and get ready for it, to Bubba Ritchie, our resident anarchist Black Cross warrior, I want to tell you that we are hearing Ralph Schoenman of Taking Aim, and he has never dropped the gauntlet once in terms of standing up for truth and the message of the struggle all over the world. And we thank him because we know he was on another line, international line, and he interrupted his agenda of trying to save lives abroad to bring truth to us here. We thank you, Brother Ralph Schoenman. We thank you. I have two Ralphs in my life, them both, Ralph Schoenman and Ralph Boyce. And we want to acknowledge that this trio, Ralph Schoenman, Ralph Poynter, and Larry Pinkney, in addition to the struggle of the world, helped bring Lynn home. These three stalwart brothers, Larry, Ralph, and Ralph. And without further ado, we want to acknowledge that Sister Lynn is in the house. And before we end, we want to leave time. Sister Susan. Oh, excuse me. Sister Suzanne Ross is in the house. You have to forgive me, folks. It's still not with me that Sister Lynn is gone. You have to forgive me. I'm sorry. We want to acknowledge that Suzanne Ross is in the house. She attended the incredible demonstration of the young people against this latest Syrian attack. But she is also here to tell us about the latest, we hope, and I emphasize, we hope, victory for Brother Mamia Abu-Jamal. Sister Suzanne Ross, your mic is open.
Okay, am I on? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, loud and clear.
Okay, great. So great to be on with all these wonderful people, especially to hear Larry, because I have Reverend Larry Pinkney, because I don't get to hear him all the time at all. I join the people, by the way, on the call who are not so sanguine about the attempt to control it all and to keep everything under control. The United States did drop nuclear weapons in 1945, that early. So, and given the volatility, the increased volatility of the world, I'm definitely nervous. And if they don't do nuclear war, they can destroy it with global warming and all the attacks on the environment. So I want to start with two things. The consciousness of the people of this country and the people of the world is a major, major concern. And if we have people, and forgive me being negative, starting with the negative thing, but I have to. Last week on Democracy Now!, Noam Chomsky was on twice, Monday and Tuesday. And at this horrendous moment of the United States about to invade Venezuela, potentially North Korea, and already last week dropped these missiles on Syria. Right before that, Chomsky, in the armchair philosophy school of activism in this country that intellectuals favor, basically spoke of all the problems that are going on in Venezuela, that weaknesses in the government, what they haven't done, talked about both sides being wrong in Syria, and did not take an unequivocal non-interventionist stand, did not say under no circumstances should the United States intervene in Syria, in Venezuela, in North Korea, and wherever else it's keeping its eye on. And for a leading intellectual in the United States, so respected by so many on the left, to that kind of perspective at this moment in history explains to some extent, why our people and are often ignorant and often misled by the propaganda that we hear from the mainstream media. If we have friends like Noam Chomsky playing such a leading role in the movement, it's dangerous. It's a dangerous situation. And I know he is revered by lots of people, and far more than my word would be, but I have to speak out and say how appalling it was to hear him and to have him given so much time on a major alternative show, perhaps the most significant alternative news show that we have that reaches so many people, at least Democracy Now! On the other hand, I want to say, again, for those who might have missed it, and I mentioned this to Betty and Ralph earlier today when I saw them, there was, in the United Nations, after the invasion of Syria, there was little Bolivia with its indigenous president, and the spokesman who was there walked into the United Security Council and the General Assembly with a huge picture of Colin Powell saying, what happened with those weapons of mass destruction back then, which justified over a million deaths, which justified war, which was used to flame up a war that never should have happened and created, you know, totally invented. This was a fictional story. And later on, the United States, of course, acknowledged it. But how many people in this country know and are really aware? Well, I went to a demonstration last Friday night right here in New York City at Union Square that was very encouraging. As I said earlier to Ralph and Lynn, probably average age was about 25. Sarah Flounders was the oldest speaker by far, and the young people were so angry and so clear that this was a lot of BS, that the reasons given for the intervention in Syria was totally fabricated. They couldn't care less what excuses they gave. They were absolutely clear about condemning the United States for the intervention. And then grew and grew and grew in numbers and then went on the march. I had injured myself and could not go on the march, but I understand it was extremely militant and very, very clear in its message. Found that very encouraging. So maybe Noam Chomsky needs to listen to these young people and learn and get out of his armchair.
Right.
Thank you.
Oh, so much about...
Thank you. For that, but
now,
Suzanne,
what you didn't want me to talk about is
the 24th.
So, real quick, right? We only have about a few minutes left.
I'd like to endorse what Suzanne Ross was saying about Chomsky. I think it's overdue and necessary because what we're dealing with here are what we should call appropriately the limits of liberalism. Noam Chomsky has never met a Democrat he didn't support.
Right.
He proudly embraces what he calls
the lesser evil. The lesser evil for Chomsky is what he ascribes to his anarchist principles. It's not a scintilla of anarchist impulse in Chomsky. It's basically, as I say, the limits of liberalism. This has long been his mantra. This is his function. This is his role. He puts an equal sign between the victim and the aggressor, and that is not a class-conscious thing to do. It is, on the contrary, facilitating the role of the apologist for imperialism, and that's his function, in my judgment. Has been for a long time and continues to be.
Absolutely, if I may say so. I agree. I agree with Larry. Absolutely on point. Absolutely.
If I may go forward, absolutely, you will never hear this on not only the corporate media, but the so-called liberal media. But you continue with an event, Suzanne, that we must all attend.
Okay, let me just also add, as we're talking about Chomsky, that Chomsky, for all his historical support for greater level of justice in Palestine, does not support BDS, the main international campaign of the Palestinian movement. That's the boycott, divestment, I keep forgetting what the last one stands for.
Sanctions.
Sanctions, right, sanctions. So that is another thing, and we have to stop revering people like that. This does not raise our collective consciousness. Now, April 24th, on the heels of a great victory on the medical front and Mumia finally starting to be treated with the Harvoni, the cure for hepatitis C, which he's now on approximately day 6, and that was wonderful. A little more than 2 years of struggle, international movement, lots of people, lots of fights, lots of actions, et cetera, et cetera. Great lawyers, great doctor, et cetera, et cetera. Immediately after that, we have this moment in history on April 24th, which also happens to be Mumia's birthday, where there will be a hearing in the Philadelphia court system, in the Justice Center, on the issue of the conflict of interest that the prosecutor and the original prosecutor in the case in Philadelphia then became head of the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. I'm talking about Ronald Castillo, who was trained by the deadly Lynn Abraham, who was known as the person who you know, requested the death penalty on more cases than any other prosecutor in the country. That's who he was trained by. He became the Supreme Court and got to, listen to this, listen to the logic of this, got to be in charge of the appeals process for Mumia's conviction. In other words, Mumia was convicted in Philadelphia under the jurisdiction of Judge Sabo, who many people will remember as somebody who was universally denounced. Internationally, people were shocked at him. Amnesty International denounced his behavior in court, et cetera, et cetera. That's the person, the judge, who controlled and manipulated the case so that Mumia was convicted and sentenced to death. This case then went before the Court of Appeals, the appeals process in the state, with Castile now reviewing his own ruling, his own prosecution of this man. He now gets to review whether the prosecution and the judgment was fair or not. Now, as I said earlier to some people, any child would know that if you're talking about justice, the person who originally convicted someone cannot be the one who you then appeal to review a case. So we all argue that, the lawyers argue that, they were campaigning for him to recuse himself, and he refused. Many, many years later, last year, another defendant in Pennsylvania, who was sentenced to death also, who is on life in prison right now in Pennsylvania, his name is Williams. He takes this issue all the way to the United States Supreme Court, which, shockingly enough, should have recused himself. We're saying, right on, brother, and so should Mumia. Now, nothing has happened on that case beyond the Supreme Court ruling in his favor, and now we're waiting. We're going to say the same thing on Mumia's case, and we're going to be in Philadelphia demanding that all the decisions that were made under the jurisdiction of
the day and the give us the place. We're running out
okay.
of time.
So, all right, April 24th, call. If you're coming from New York, call 212-927-2924, 212-927-2924. That's my phone. I'm coordinating a caravan with many other people driving to Philadelphia that morning. It's at 9 o'clock in the morning. We're leaving New York real early. Buses, it's too late. You can't make it if you go by bus because the buses don't leave early enough. It's at 1303 Filbert Street in Philadelphia. It's the Criminal Justice Center. We're going to be marching all around town after that hearing because we're going to make sure.
Ann Lamb.
Yes, I love the song. We got good news from Seb. He's also getting his insulin pump monitor. I heard that the day before we got the news on Mumia.
Go ahead, Ann.
I was saying that I heard from Seth on Wednesday, and we are happy to report that finally, after much struggle and carrying on and back and forth with Albany, Seth and the staff at Sullivan are finally being trained in the use of the insulin pump monitor. Yay!
Thank you, Ann. We love you. We love all
love
of you guys,
too.
And good night. We'll start
have a
with
a lovely night
next week. Richie, we apologize, but we had to get the announcement in for Mumia. Thank you all.
Thanks.